Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All right, in Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK, historic Fisk University, and on this lovely Sunday morning. And I'm welcoming back to the show today Kent Annan. And Kent, before I introduce you formally and all that, I guessed this, and tell me if I guessed correctly, because I interview a boatload of people. Weren't you here in like late last year? I had you on.
I was. I can't remember the exact date, but we said 2 or 3 months ago, and I loved getting to talk to him. I'm grateful to be back with you.
Oh, definitely. I think it was like November, December. It was back when your book first hit.
And, it came out,
Yeah. So I told you I was going to have you back, and ta-da!
I'm grateful to be back.
Oh, definitely. And Kent is, among many things, he is the director of the Humanitarian and Disaster Institute at Wheaton College. And Kent, we're just happy to have you back and talk with you in depth on this subject, because it's going to remain in our headlines for many years to come. And you're hitting it head on in your book. What has the response been to your book and the concept? The book is You Welcome Me, Loving Refugees and Immigrants Because God First Loved Us. What's been the impact? People wanting you to speak, or you've been out doing presentations? What's going on?
Yes, I've been speaking lots of places around the country, and talking with media, and doing some more writing, sort of smaller articles to go in places. So I think, like you said, people know this is an issue. It's going to remain an issue, and it's been encouraging too with churches, hearing from churches that are using the book in this study of guide materials, just thinking, okay, this is an issue, and for people of faith, this is an issue, and how do we think about it, like, faithfully and well, and not be scared about it, and also not talk about it like the politicians talk about it.
Right,
so it seems like a sort of response out there.
So, and the fear that you, and discussion about fear, what was it that were people just scared of them because they're different, the unknown, or what? Or was it the images that have been cast? What was it?
Yeah, I think it is that the images that get cast, the way people get talked about, I think that fear of unknown, the unknown, I think is a big part of it. Now, what's interesting, I'm at Wheaton College and I'm doing this, I work with master's degree students, and we're going into humanitarian work, and we're just reading a book called Factfulness, and in there it talks about these different instincts for how people interpret the world, and one of them is the fear instinct, which is, basically one shark attack happens on a beach, that sort of ramps up the fear, and everyone's scared of that. But maybe, meanwhile, tens of thousands of people are dying of skin cancer, or some other disease on the beach. But it's all about the shark because that seems so scary. So I think people, if you have a politician or someone telling a story about an immigrant who killed somebody and they do it dramatically, that it just taps into people's fear instinct. So I think we need to counter that with the truth and say, no, that's not, like, that's manipulation. That's not true. These are not people to be scared of. Mm-hmm. And actually, a lot of times, people who are running away from danger, they're not people who are bringing danger to us. And so I think it's sort of trying to change the narrative, and that's one of the things you have to do is counter fear that can be manipulated.
Well, and, it just seems really hard to penetrate people's minds because they're so bent on not hearing anything other than the same messaging. And that's what's wrong, that's why a lot of people are stuck, because they're just staying inside their bubbles and they're afraid to venture out and hear something new or differing opinion or whatever. That is really tearing up this country right now.
That is a huge, you're exactly right, a huge part of it, getting these kind of different media silos where people just hear their story and it gets reinforced. And one of the things that has me hopeful, and we'll see if it's a hope that's true, a true one that I should have, but you know, one of the places I think that that's not true completely is in the church. And so, you know, I go to different churches, and there's certainly a part where the church gets in silos, too, and along a lot of different lines. But I also have found there are a number of churches that have people on this immigration and refugee issue where people in one church, you know, come have different political views. I find that sort of hopeful because I think, oh, maybe that's one of the places where we can talk about this and actually change minds because they can still hear about the way God's love should be reaching to them, and so should our love. And so I'm hopeful about this message continuing to spread in the church.
Have you found that because some of the churches are mission oriented, you know, or missionaries, or they are connected to international outreaches, etc., are they more inclined, according to your work, are they more inclined to understand the issue and do what Jesus would have us do, or does it have an impact at all?
Yeah, that is one of the things that's helpful, is they've had missions and missionaries come back and talk about people in a positive light. You know, maybe the church worked at some point to help resettle a refugee, and that refugee, you know, became part of the church. So you know, I think those stories and that shared history is one of the things that makes it where it is a little bit more hopeful that this message and something different can happen in church, for sure.
But, of course, it's up to that ministry, that particular pastor, et cetera, because he's the leader. He's the one that's determining what the flock will be fed. And if that person has a skewed mindset that may not be about God all the time, it might be about politics, then the people are going to suffer.
That's true. I think that it's the pastor, or if it's like whoever's in charge of Christian education, can sometimes get a book or a certain discussion or speaker in, and so there are other ways, but definitely a lot of it has to do with what's the story about other people that's being told from the pulpit. You know, is probably the biggest factor of what shapes you know, the story of how people are understanding the world. And like you said, we hope people are just seeking to follow Jesus, and even if it goes against some politics or it can be kind of a risk, that's good. Actually, one of the stories I tell in my book, You Welcomed Me, that I really liked, it goes along these lines, was a pastor I got to know and met from California, and he was in a church that was pretty politically, you know, a bit of a mix, but pretty conservative, and he told me that, you know, he just felt more and more convicted that the neighborhood where they were living was becoming increasingly Hispanic, and so these were their neighbors, and they realized, you know, the politics was out of sync with the people they needed to reach and serve and love in their neighborhood, and that kept happening. So then he one day went and he invited a DACA recipient, so one of the Dreamers, you know, who's here illegally because they're brought as children, you know, across the border with their parents. And so he had one of these DACA Dreamers give his testimony in church, and he told me he even stood in the back of the church nervous and watching this and thinking, okay, this might be my last Sunday. Like, people might really, you know, go against this and you know, might react really badly to this because I'm sort of pushing something political and a bit challenging them by bringing this person who some people wouldn't agree with the politics of. And he said, at the end of this testimony by this young person that talked about being a dreamer and the struggles, but also that they're a fellow follower of Jesus, that the congregation stood up and gave a standing applause to it. And it totally changed the direction of their church. And their church now that, you know, has hundreds of students on their campus doing, you know, who are from that community, who are getting tutoring. They do outreach at churches, at schools. They just do all kinds of work. And so I think that's an encouraging thing. Like you said, the pastor can sort of block things from happening, but also if a pastor takes a risk, it can be a risk. I've heard of other pastors losing some of their congregation, but If they let the right voices in and a new story, then sometimes something really beautiful can break out.
Well, that at that point, I guess the Lord wins.
Right, exactly. That's a good way to say it.
I mean, you know, because that is like today in this discussion under the heading of what would Jesus do? Well, he wouldn't be blocking you. He wouldn't be the great blocker, you know. He would not be doing that. And I was kind of jokingly last hour asking the question, when I was talking about this hour, I said, what would Jesus do? Would Jesus build a wall around the country?
Right.
I mean, would he do that? I mean, you know, if you just think about it, I mean, just so let me ask you, your experienced man of faith, you know, when dealing with these issues that we hear about in our nation is at odds over, or some of it is, about the wall up and blocking out refugees and immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
Is that Christ-like?
Yeah, I think it's slightly complex, but I think the first thrust is, you know, we want to be welcoming and helping. And so I think if we're building a wall out of fear or to keep people out and sort of demonizing them, then, you know, none of those things are Christ-like and wanting to share and help people. I think at the same time, it says, I'm not pro-wall at all, so I'm against a wall, to be totally clear. But then I do think that there's complexity in the country in wrestling with, okay, how do we have a border, you know, that's respected and processed, that's respected. So I'm against a wall, but I understand that we can be welcoming, we can welcome more asylum seekers, we can welcome way more refugees as a country that we can do now. Mm-hmm. We can be way more generous. The thing is, we don't have to, that's not an either or of having border security and having borders that work and having a visa process that works. So I think what we need to do is have both, that we can, we can have wise laws, and have order and know that there are some security issues, but we can be welcoming and have no need for a border, and experts who work on border security, you know, almost all say a border wall. A wall is not necessary or very helpful. So I think we can be super welcoming. We don't need a wall. And we can also know that we need to, you know, check who's coming in sometimes and make sure they are asylum seekers or refugees or people coming to work. And we don't want lots of drugs coming across the border. Mm-hmm. So I think the fact that it's set up as, oh, we need a wall and keep everybody out is not the right way to go.
Yeah.
But there are some things that we can do that are really helpful.
Certainly. Well, and, you know, let us not forget that the drugs that are already here and the pharmaceuticals that are here.
Oh, the opioids are killing so many people that are made here.
Yeah, that is a crisis proportion that, you know, have nothing to do with being smuggled in by, you know, I mean, it's like, the companies that make them are here. So, you know, to a certain degree. And the bulk of the illegal drugs are at the ports where they're catching them at the ports. So, you know, some of it is just plain fear mongering. And it's really sad to see that take place on such a serious, the issue is serious, and we should handle it as serious people. Do you think that is a church being risky or to maybe loss of congregation if they address issues like this? Because I can see this being territorial.
Right. I think it can be territorial, but I think if it's done in a way that's sort of respectful and say, okay, we're coming into this.
Mm-hmm.
I've done this. I've been at all kinds of small groups or big groups in churches, and I have other colleagues who work on similar matters. And I think if we go in there saying, okay, this is going to be political, but we're not being partisan. You know, we're not coming in to, when it's in a church setting, we're not coming in just for one political party. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Jesus, what Jesus says is going to be political sometimes. Like, it's about welcoming people, and it's not about fear-mongering and all of this, so it's going to get a little bit political. But if we do that, I think in a way that respects folks, it can work. So when I go into church, I'll say, like, I'll just be up front and saying, okay, we're probably sitting here, we have people on different sides of the issue. And so we can acknowledge that, and we can love and respect each other, but let's see what Jesus says, and let's get uncomfortable and think about how we love and how generous we're going to be, and who are the people that we're talking about, and are they really people to be feared, or are these are people who are having to run away from home just to survive? And and I think for me, I've found if we can go in knowing, oh, I want to love people in the church who are on both sides of the issue, and then help them to love, you know, immigrants and refugees. And, you know, it's not that everybody's going to agree, but I think the church takes a little bit of a risk, but we can reduce that risk by coming in from a kind of respectful angle. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean pulling punches or not taking on the hard issues, but just being respectful in the way we take on these hard issues. And I think it really is, there's a lot of possibility in the church. And I hope, I know a lot of churches are talking about this, but I think there are hundreds, even thousands of churches out there who would do well to take this on and step in and talk about it more, because I think it really is important for the church and for the local communities who have immigrants and refugees, and it's so important for our country right now, too.
Definitely. And it just seems like some things seem like, just from looking at them, like the Lord is waiting for us to, you know, for God's people, to be the one sometime to, you know, roll the ball, to start it. Just
one thing that's in the...
In the civil rights movement and other things, you know, it was the community of faith that really pushed the envelope on that one. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Exactly. Yeah, and because people are going to be people of faith, they're kind of listening, even if we're slow sometimes, and it takes too long. But they, you know, people of faith should be wanting to follow God, and that should break through and change us to take us in a different direction than we're used to. I'm just thinking, as a people of faith, like one of the things that I think is exciting is when we talk about refugees and immigrants is, you know, it's about helping them, and we want to be welcoming and generous to people who have lost their homes and are getting away for survival for some reason. But one of the things that's happening in the U.S. is, you know, some of the strongest churches in the country are immigrant churches, and some of the pockets of faith are these refugee communities. And so I think part of what happens when we let people in is sometimes maybe we need revival so that we can be better at welcoming, but some of what happens is revival is coming from around the world to join us, and some of the kind of immigrant churches are the growing, thriving churches. And so I think what part of who we let in are the people of God and people of faith who can even encourage us in our own faith.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the dynamics. So they're not just victims, they're people of faith, and they're professionals, and I think they can help us in our faith as well.
Well, heaven for sure, and I doubt it if God's going to say, okay, no immigrants, no refugees in heaven, no black people, no Haitians, you know, no diasporas, you know, I just doubt that, okay? I just really, really doubt that. I just cannot, you know, the Father created all of us, and, you know, that's the nerve of us to think.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, that's arrogant.
That vision of Revelation, everyone's before the Lamb, all tribes, all kinds of language, all kinds of people.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just the thought of that is like, man, that's ignorance.
Exactly.
Oh, Lord. See, God, that's why we got to pray all the time. You know, to stamp out the stupidity. Anyway, Kent, when we come back, X, I know you wanted to jump in. And
you had a quick question.
Yeah, we'll do it after the break, because I've been knowing you for a long time. There's no such thing as a quick question, okay? I'm just making a statement because it's true. Anyway, our discussion this morning is, and for the community of faith, if you have a question or comment on this subject, just call us. You know, we Jesus people too, like you. What would Jesus do? about refugees and immigration and its challenge for Christianity. If you have a question or comment, it's 615-329-8810, and my guest is Kent Annan. He is director of the Humanitarian and Disaster Institute at Wheaton College and author of several books, and we'll be mentioning those. And he has worked in the community of faith and been part of it for so long, and we're happy to have him back on the show. So questions or comments in the discussion, 615-329-8810. We're taking the time out, and we'll be right back.
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Dependable and knowledgeable agent, seeks customers looking for protection and long-term relationships. Look no further than Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Having one special person for your car, home, and life insurance lets you get down to business with the rest of your life. You can stop by the offices of Terry W. Jones at 545 Main Stream Drive, Suite 104 in Metro Center, or call 615-256-6066 or by email at myagent@terrywjones.net.
The USA has lots of buried pipelines, so it's important to know the signs of a leak, like if you smell unusual odors or hear hissing, see bubbling earth or water, or dead or dying vegetation. Some signs are even harder to miss, like dirt being blown into the air, a frost ball in an open field, or a flame coming from the ground. If you see any of these signs, don't wait. Leave the area immediately and call 911 or your pipeline company.
Visit pipesafety.org. Brought to you by the Tennessee Gas Association.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is also brought to you by SAG Funeral Home. SAG Funeral Home has now opened their own crematory services. They are also committed to pass on the savings to our customers, providing and serving all communities within a 50-mile radius of Nashville. SAG Funeral Home also provides full traditional funeral services. For more information, contact SAG Funeral Home at sagfuneral@gmail.com or call 615-244-5044. Visit our website at sagfuneralhome.com and on Facebook at facebook.com/sagfuneralhome.
It's What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Hello, Nashville. Coming up Wednesday afternoon at 4, we'll get started with news from the community and the traffic report. Then at 4:20, preacher, activist, and writer Joel Goza discusses his new book, America's Unholy Ghost, The Racist Roots of Faith and Politics. Then at 5 o'clock, the discussion is on the path to creating sustained happiness. My guest is Jane Wacker. She's a family counselor and author. Your questions and comments are always welcome.
That's What's the 411 with Sharon Kay twice a week, every Wednesday afternoon from 4 to 6 p.m. and every Sunday morning from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. right here on Jazzy 88 WFSK.
Support for WFSK comes from Living Parables Drama Ministry of Born Again Church, inviting you to experience romance, suspense, laughter, and tears. Don't miss the upcoming spring production, Chosen, Are You Ready? Thursday, April 11th through Saturday, April 13th at 7 p.m. and Sunday, April 14th at 3:30 p.m. Chosen, written and directed by Bishop Horace Hockett, pastor of Born Again Church and founder of Living Parables Drama Ministry. Chosen presents an artistic experience overflowing with multifaceted entertainment and inspiration. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit livingparables.net. Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon. Sharon Kay.
Alrighty, Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house, and we're mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK. And Kent Annan, Director of Humanitarian and Disaster Institute at Wheaton College, is back with me to talk about what would Jesus do about refugees and immigration. And Barbara wants to weigh in and give some thoughts on it this morning. Thank you so much for holding, Barbara. What do you have for us?
Good morning. Good morning to you, guests.
Good morning.
I just wanted to mention, the word that says faith cometh by hearing the word of God.
Mm-hmm.
Faith also comes by hearing that's not the word of God. And we've really seen a rise up in our nation, you know, after some open and blatant things have been said through the media by certain individuals. But I attend a church with diverse ethnicity,
mm-hmm.
and we seldom ever hear something that has to do with the races. And there's only a human race, but somehow we call it the races when it's different ethnicities.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate, you know, what I've heard this morning so far. And I think it's a great approach, especially for the churches,
mm-hmm.
To start, you know, entertaining the things that I'm hearing, you know, from his book,
mm-hmm.
Concerning refugees or just one people.
Mm-hmm.
Just one people, mm-hmm. you know, the human race.
Mm-hmm.
And I also on your commercial about some author has written something about the unholy ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's way overdue that these things are, you know, mm-hmm. Being, you know, touched on in the church.
Mm-hmm.
It should, you know, should be a place where that word goes out, because for sure the people of God should be those, you know, who are entertaining anybody,
mm-hmm.
you know, not knowing, you know, whether they're even entertaining angels,
mm.
unaware.
Mm. Wow, Kim.
But I appreciate your forum, and thank you so much, Sharon. Your reach goes far. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate you for calling, and gave us some interesting things to discuss. Have a blessed rest of the day.
Thank you, and you all as well.
Okay. Ken, what do you say about that?
Yes, thank you. I think it's so important to be talking about, mm-hmm. you know, what's happening with race right now and then churches as well. You know, refugee and immigration issues are just one of them, but if you think about what's been happening, well, throughout the country's history, of course, but then in recent years, mm-hmm. Church should be one of these places where we take on risky topics, where we love each other, where we're able to talk about what happens or what's happening in the black community or what happens if there's a shooting or what happens if our president says a country about, you were talking before the break about the diaspora, and what happens mm-hmm. if our president says, you know, a word we can't say on the radio, but about, you know, people from different countries in Africa and Haiti, a country that I love and have lived in. And so so I think it's important for us to be talking about these things in church, and we don't have to get partisan and promoting a political mm-hmm. party, but we can't avoid the hard issues of the day, and we need to be able to speak into them. So I appreciate that caller saying that,
yeah.
and I think I've talked about diversity and talked yeah. about racial tension and talked about injustice is one of the beautiful opportunities in church that we don't want to shy away from. We want to step into lovingly.
Well, and I think right now that there's so many people that may be expecting to hear from a certain segment of the community of faith about these issues that have spoken up about so many things over the years, and now they are completely silent on everything. And that to me is it's a signal or a sign that, you know, this ultra right church or whoever, Southern Baptist, whatever, they're mum quiet. There's no, you see no, I don't even know what happens in those houses of worship, but the discussions are not there. You don't see and hear anything. Because I know historically they have always had something to say about everything. And I've not heard a mumbling word. And I find that rather amazing at this point in time in history, that the people who have always had something to say about everything that people have ever done in the annals of history, including, you know, how the President of the United States talks to the people or does whatever, any outfit he's had on, shoes, whatever. I mean, they've had something to say and have absolutely nothing to say, I think, is astounding. Because, that segment of the community of faith is completely silent. And it's very disheartening to see.
Yeah, and I think what's happening is, there, you know, because of where the politics line up for for different issues, that is quiet. There are definitely some leaders still who are stepping up in those communities, but I think it's not the, they're not the voices that get sort of played in the media. And so I just, as I know some of those, some people in those communities and the conservative evangelical churches, and I get to work with them, a lot of them have good experience working with refugees and with immigrants. A lot of them would disagree, but with what's happening. But I think the voices that get into the media, you're right, the dominant voices right now, the ones that get quoted, are the ones who are supporting the president on some of these issues. Yeah. And it looks like it's just one block, and they are quite, that community is quite supportive of the president right now, you know, for issues other than these. So it is. It's a frustrating time, and I think the church is struggling with how to respond. And, yeah. And I think the voices that, you know, I would hope we'd hear more from those communities of faith, that whether it's the people in the pews or the leaders, you know, don't get hurt as much as the other ones who are speaking against immigrants and refugees, for example.
Well, I mean, you know, if it was, what would Jesus do on everything else up to a certain point? And then it's the question doesn't even get asked. So that is really essentially why when I had you back today to continue the discussion on your book, I know the Sunday morning audience, you know, largely are people that are thinking, faith way. And something fell upon me by accident, and I thank them for doing that. But, it's just to ask the question, because it looks so obvious that it really is not about the Lord in the first place. I mean, it's just about politics. It's not about doing, you know, what the Lord has, thus said the Lord, because I'm just like, well, why doesn't only thus said the Lord during certain times and not? You know, I'm like, this is a house of confusion here, y'all. So, I mean, it's, the messaging is just horrible.
I think we need to have God speak into all parts of our lives.
Amen.
And any time we think we're, I think for any of us, wherever we are politically, if we start being too much in sync with a certain politician or a certain party, we probably want to ask ourselves, okay, is there anything in here that we're just following because it's this party and not because it's the way God wants us to go? And so right now, and I think whoever's in power probably has to ask themselves that more than others. So I do think it's a time for the white evangelical church, and I think there is a bit of a, you know, wrestling that's happening, even if it's not as public and doesn't get in the media, of leaders asking and some people in the pews saying, wait, you know, of course some people are totally aligned with this politically, but other people are saying, wait, our calling isn't to be a political party. Our calling is to follow Jesus, and sometimes we're going to align with some political party when we do that, but other times we need to be prophets and say, no, this isn't okay, and every single person needs to be spoken about as though they're, because they're made in the image of God, and it's not okay to talk about people in this way, and it's not okay to use fear as a main motivation when we want to be people of love. So I think you're right that there's, you know, there is a crisis right now that
that needs to be addressed, and there needs to be renewal and wrestling with all these issues for sure.
Well, I think, ask something to get your comment in a second, but I think, you know, people just forget that God is paying attention to everything. He sees mm-hmm. all this, and he already knows what we're going to do before we do it. But, I mean, the point is that nobody's fooling him. He's not fooled by it. He's watching. He's seeing, you know. I mean, if people think they can do phony Jesus, he ain't having it. The Father's not having it. Because he'll show you what he's working with. At the most unusual times, you'll be like, oh, how did that happen? Anyway, X, what do you want to say?
Yeah, it's sort of, you know, I had a professor at American Baptist College named Dr. Vincent Campbell, and he would say to us all the time, he would warn us in class that when we preach and when we teach the gospel, that you should always leave the room cracked, especially when it comes to things like immigration or if you're talking about those subjects. And it strikes me that the reason why we have the hypocrisy, especially from the religious right and others who are remaining silent, especially through the Obama years, is that you can't really honestly talk about or teach about things that you've been teaching improperly. Because now you have to go mm-hmm. back on your word or back on your teaching and either apologize for how you taught it or ignore it altogether. And so the people who sit in the congregations who should know better don't, because they're being led astray. So how do you, you know, in terms of every Thanksgiving, we celebrate, we call it a pagan holiday, but how you celebrate every Thanksgiving, which is the celebration of the United States of War, the pilgrims and the Indians, and how they were able to come together for Thanksgiving. You celebrate that knowing that it was the Native Americans who were kind to sort of be kind to those who were here, and they did not die, as a matter of fact, save lives. And then turn around mm-hmm. and say, you know, well, immigrants can't come to the country. So, you know, what are you teaching in your churches if on Thanksgiving, if nothing else, every year, you're sitting around taking a holiday off? So it's just hypocrisy, and it's just not being taught properly, period. You know, this, we have to go back, and they need to speak up. No, they know better. They know better. Mm-hmm. And people mm-hmm. all over know better. It doesn't matter what race you're from. Doesn't matter. If you were taught that Columbus discovered America, you know better, period. The end, yeah. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's super insightful. I think when we talk about these issues, part of why the conversation is going badly is we aren't honest about 400, 500 years of history, mm-hmm. right? And so if we have these wrong frameworks of talking about it, if we're not rooted in memory, if we're not rooted in confession, mm-hmm. you know, if you think about who's in power or the white community and of how the country was formed. So I think this is exactly right. Mm-hmm. It makes me think of the way God encouraged Israel to remember and treat foreigners was, you know, God said, oh, rooted in memory and in history. And mm-hmm. so God said, oh, treat the foreigners well, because remember, you once were foreigners too. And God's referring mm-hmm. to Israel being in Exodus and mm-hmm. enslaved and being mm-hmm. exploited in another land. So mm-hmm. remember how you were exploited, and so treat other people well. And mm-hmm. it does feel like part of this story about immigrants and refugees, like mm-hmm. you were just saying, Exodus, like remember that your ancestors were people who were welcomed and then exploited and mm-hmm. took the land from those who welcomed them. And remember mm-hmm. that you didn't welcome the African-American community, like they were brought over as slaves. And so if our like part of this should be remembering how our country was formed, and for Irish people or whatever, like remember your ancestors were refugees who ran away from a slave from a famine and came over to the other side. And so if you're alive because other people welcomed you mm-hmm. from escaping a famine, then why aren't you welcoming people who are coming from a famine? Mm-hmm. And country after country and our ancestors in this history, that we should be welcoming more than anybody. Mm-hmm. And so it is tragic that we don't. And part mm-hmm. of it, I think, is a failure of memory mm-hmm. and maybe kind of trying to block off mm-hmm. our memory so we don't have to do the uncomfortable mm-hmm. thing.
Say it now. You're about to preach mm-hmm. this morning now.
Okay. Yes, but no, thanks. So thanks for saying that. I think you're right. I think this is a bigger picture issue, you know, than just right now or this election cycle. It is how do we talk about these things in our church and look at our history, and sometimes we're the worst at it, but we should be at the best thing.
Yes.
We can handle the truth. We have God's grace with us, and we want to love, and we can handle this, and that might mean confession and and discomfort and sacrifice, but we should be willing to do it as we try to follow after
Jesus. Yeah. Well, and might I add, as we go around, I'm sorry, but might I just add this, that it's been taught in the white church from slavery, you know, mm-hmm. from slavery. So, yep. so the model of how Christ has been taught has been mistaught for generations. That
since
kept
the
people
beginning
in bondage. Exactly. But especially
time.
So our institution, our church institutions in the United States, some of them, not all, but the majority that teach this way have been indoctrinated with this false understanding of Christianity and just an inclusiveness, mm. but it's not truly inclusive because even in the black church, now I'm crossing the lines here because but our model is different because we did it for protection because we didn't have any other choice. But across the board, 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 10:45 is the most segregated time in the country, all over the country, yep. and that's why.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, and often it was because the white churches wouldn't let, even the African-American communities wanted to come in, but they wouldn't let them into their churches.
Well, so, I would say that...
And the AME knows that with, what is it, Richard Allen?
Richard Allen.
Yeah, so that, yeah.
Let me say to that, the book, Christian Slavery, that, you know, we had her on before. There's an author by the name of Catherine Gerbner. She wrote a book called Christian Slavery, A Conversation in Race in the Protestant Atlantic World. We're bringing her back. It's more of the same thing that is, you know, kind of weaving into our discussion today. But, you know, what I want to say this, and then we're going to take the break. When you know better, you should do better. And folks that know better, if they knew better, the world wouldn't be in the condition it's in right now. Come on, Jesus, help me this morning. Because folks know better. They know better than to go out and do 99.9% of the foolishness that they are doing, but they do it anyway. So knowing that that's the case, it spills right over into the church for sure. The leadership, that's what's up. If you're a leader in a church or have an opinion or a thought, what would Jesus do as you're getting dressed and doing your hair and makeup and everything, pressing, ironing, or shaking out the wrinkles? What would Jesus do about refugees and immigration and its challenge for Christianity? Get your thoughts and opinions if you give us a call at 615-329-8810. Give us a call at 615-329-8810.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810. 329-8810.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Dependable and knowledgeable agent, seeks customers looking for protection and long-term relationships. Look no further than Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Having one special person for your car, home, and life insurance lets you get down to business with the rest of your life. You can stop by the offices of Terry W. Jones at 545 Mainstream Drive, Suite 104 in Metro Center, or call 615-256-6066 or by email at myagent@terrywjones.net.
The primary job for a traditional jazz drummer is to make sure the music doesn't just speed up or slow down. But drummer Allison Miller does more than keep time. She's built a unique style of playing called melodic drumming. Hear how she does it, plus how female empowerment is thriving in the jazz community. That's coming up next time on Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride. Catch Jazz Night in America every Sunday from 2 to 3 p.m. and Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. here at listener-supported Jazzy 88.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is also brought to you by SAG Funeral Home. SAG Funeral Home has now opened their own crematory services. They are also committed to pass on the savings to our customers, providing and serving all communities within a 50-mile radius of Nashville. SAG Funeral Home also provides full traditional funeral services. For more information, contact SAG Funeral Home at sagfuneral@gmail.com or call 615-244-5044. Visit our website at sagfuneralhome.com and on Facebook at facebook.com/sagfuneralhome.
Hi, I'm Julie Mix McPeak, Commissioner for the Tennessee Department of Commerce and Insurance. The Department of Commerce and Insurance regulates insurance in Tennessee. That means more than you might think. We educate consumers, we mediate insurance-related complaints, and we enforce the state's insurance laws. We can explain your options and answer your questions. You can turn to us for help when you need it. For more information, visit tn.gov/commerce.
Brought to you by the Department of Commerce and Insurance in cooperation with the Tennessee Association of Broadcasters.
Support for WFSK comes from Living Parables Drama Ministry, a born-again church, inviting you to experience romance, suspense, laughter, and tears. Don't miss the upcoming spring production, Chosen, Are You Ready? Thursday, April 11th through Saturday, April 13th at 7 p.m. and Sunday, April 14th at 3:30 p.m. Chosen, written and directed by Bishop Horace Hockett, pastor of born-again church and founder of Living Parables. Parables Drama Ministry. Chosen presents an artistic experience overflowing with multifaceted entertainment and inspiration. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit livingparables.net. Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All right, in Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on. Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic. Fisk University, and What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance, also brought to you by Integrity Dental Care and SAG Funeral Home. We thank you so very much for supporting What's the 411. And I'm asking you, Nashville and global family listening at WFSKFM.org, what would Jesus do about refugees and immigration and its challenge for Christianity? My guest is author and director of the Humanitarian and Disaster Institute at Wheaton College, Kent Annan. And Kent, additionally, among the many other philanthropic things that he does and advocacy work that he does, he also teaches adult education at his local church. So you, Sunday school teacher.
I am. I don't do it every week, but I do. I usually do two or three series during each year, and I love getting to do that for exactly the reason that we've been talking about, to talk about. And I've done one recently on refugee and immigrant issues, but I'll do one on the Psalms, I'll do it on Bible, or do something about another justice topic. So I love having these conversations in church, and not everybody comes from the same place, but right. We want to encourage people to all be seeking to follow Jesus and making a difference for their neighbors.
Now, what church do you go to? And is it Illinois, right?
In Illinois, yeah. I go to a Lutheran church here. I actually met my wife in a in seminary, and she is a Lutheran pastor, so I go to my wife's church.
Oh, okay. Now, see, that's what's up.
So I have to teach adult Sunday school whenever the pastor asks me to.
Oh, I know you do, because when your pastor's the wife, you better go ahead. Thus said the Lord on that. You got, exactly. The authority in the room. That's for sure. That's got to be an interesting dynamic for sure. Now, you said you're Lutheran?
I am, yep.
Let me ask you this about the Lutheran church. What is, denominationally speaking, what is their stance on this issue? And, I know your wife is with you on your travels to Haiti and other places, so her knowledge and background as a pastor is different versus the doctrine of the Lutheran church.
Yeah, Lutheran Church has had really good history with, they have a Lutheran immigration and refugee services. So they've had a strong tradition of being helpful, and they're one of the main, I think there are eight or nine sort of main refugee resettlement organizations that the government has worked with to resettle refugees, and they've been really strong in that. Mm-hmm. So I'm grateful that they have been been really committed for decades, you know, to this resettlement and serving immigrants, and I think they've done well there. So, you know, in churches, you know, in individual congregations have people on different sides of the issues, but they've had a strong commitment, which I'm grateful for. And then I grew up in different churches and gone to Baptist churches and Christian Missionary Alliance and lived in Haiti and went to a Baptist church there and different parts of the world. And so I've grown up in all kinds of different churches, but I'm grateful that I'm in a Lutheran church right now and that they have a commitment to serving immigrants and refugees.
So are they racially diverse, you know, congregation, or is it just like segregated like a lot of these other ones on Sundays?
It's not as diverse as as I'd love, but we do have a couple of refugee families, and there's some diversity in the church, so I'd love it for it to be more, and we'll see how that grows. But there are some refugee families in the church who sit in the back pew. I'm often in back because my son is 10, and he bounces around so much that I don't want to sit up front and distract too many people. So I sit in the back with a couple of the refugee families, and so grateful to be there, and really grateful that they're part of the congregation.
Are they? Has their experience been one to understand, you know, how much God loves us? Are they seeing, you know, God in us? You know, when, that's one of the things I'm like, well, you know, no wonder people sometimes don't want to be Christians or don't want them to do with the Lord. You know, they see us out here cutting up and acting a pure fool. So, you know, that's not helping public relations for the Lord. I mean, it can't.
Yeah, so. No, exactly. And there's some different parts of Scripture as well about that. And there's kind of an interesting prayer of Solomon in the Old Testament too, but I think how we're known by how we love, and we're supposed to be representing Jesus here, and if we're loving and welcoming, I think that's transformative for people, and they get to experience God's love through us. And if we're not, and if we're the opposite, then they can really be off-putting for people and turn them away from ever wanting to be in the church. And I also think that's true just for fellow Americans, if they see the church kind of not being loving and being political and being sort of self-serving, then I think we turn off, it's not just about the immigrants and refugees, but we can turn off our testimony for fellow Americans to say, well, I don't want to be part of a group that's sort of just about themselves and is being, you know, speaking hatefully about other people. And so I think this issue is much bigger than just the issue and for reasons of discipleship, but also reasons of witness for how we're telling the story of God.
Yeah, and I totally agree with that, because I think we're doing a disservice. You know, that I've had various press releases and studies come to my attention about, you know, there's fewer people that believe in God and joining the church and all that. Well, all that stuff adds up, you know, in the minds and hearts of the people, because they don't want to have anything to do with something so phony that they see it being about a political party and not really about, you know, the Father as the maker of all things. You know, they just, I mean, they can't possibly see it as that. You know, if we're sitting around here hating on everybody and everything because they're not such and such, or they're not European with blonde hair. I mean, come on, y'all, really? Seriously? What would Jesus do? He wouldn't dye his hair. You know, I mean, it's just like this stuff is just out of control. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you back, because I know when I initially had you on, it was a burning, it still continues to be a burning issue. But, I mean, just to have the discussion and the mindset of the community of faith is definitely worth bringing you back, because, you know, somebody might hear something that, you know, makes them want to be so, you know, inspired to, you know, have a speaker or, you know, do something, or just, you know, I don't know. I could be tripping, Ken. I don't know. Okay.
I love it, and I think part of what you're saying here too is right, and that's part of why I wanted to write this book, You Welcome Me, is like we're not only missing out on helping other people, we're missing out on being our best selves if we do this. You know, like when we look back on our lives, we want to be people who are kind of building a kind of a wall around us and keeping everyone out and being scared, or we think about when we welcome other people into our lives. Like, our lives, they get more complicated. It can be hard. It can be awkward at times, but life just gets better. And the churches I talk with who have refugees, and then they say, wow, it's more work than we ever expected, but it's so much better than it ever was before. You know, I can't imagine a life of our church without it. If you think of almost like an adoption or something, where you think, wow, that was so much work, but we can't imagine our family without that child. And so we miss out on being, if we miss out on welcoming, we miss out on being the best version of ourselves as a church, as a community, as a country. So it's a call to help other people, but it's really a call to help ourselves in a way, so that we can be our best selves, be our most welcoming and loving selves, the best version of what we can be.
Yeah, while you're on this earth. Because when you're gone, when the Lord calls your expiration number, you can't get it done then. It's too late.
And then we're going to be in a place that's diverse. So we might as well get working on it now. Right?
I love it. I do. Now, Kent, tell the audience where to find your book. And, of course, I know you do blogs and, you know, you write articles, etc. Where can they pick this information up at?
So I have a website, kentannon.com, where you can see articles and links to everything, and where people can invite me to speak. And then also, my book, You Welcomed Me, is available on Amazon, and I'm on Twitter as well, Kent Annon, there. So all the regular places, and I always love connecting with people and encouraging and hearing stories and connecting in ways that we can help each other become more loving and more welcoming. So grateful to connect with anyone, and I love being with you, and grateful for your audience as well. So,
well, you know, we got your number now, okay?
Anytime. This is a good first hour of Sunday morning. I like being with
you. Oh, it is. We got you jump started. tell the pastor, Reverend wife, I said hello.
I will do. We'll stay together. You both, we get along well.
So wonderful. Tell her we appreciate the work she's been doing there, okay?
All right. Well, thanks to you and for what you're doing and serving the community and having important conversations.
Absolutely. Take good care. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right. Take care. Thanks, Sharon. Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. That was Kent Annon. And just always just a pleasure. I didn't know his wife was a pastor. His book is You Welcomed Me, Loving Refugees and Immigrants, because God first loved us. He did. He first loved us and then said, help me, help me. What have I done? No, I'm just kidding. I want to leave you with a few Old and New Testament scriptures that I thought it might be appropriate today. James chapter 1, verse 27. Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after our orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. And then we also wanted to mention a couple more. And one in particular is Psalm 146, verse 9. The Lord watches over the foreigner and sustains the fatherless and the widow, but he frustrates the ways of the wicked. And Leviticus chapter 19, verses 33 and 34. When a foreigner resides among you in your land, do not mistreat them. That's verse 33. Verse 34 is, the foreigner residing among you must be treated as your native born. Ooh, that's America's, that's tearing them up. Well, that's Leviticus. That's the one. Leviticus is always what they quote, you know.
Leviticus quote.
Right. Love them as yourself, for you were foreigners in Egypt. I am the Lord your God.
That goes back. You know what? Ooh.
I know. That's Old Testament beatdown.
Wow.
Yeah, that's Leviticus. The Leviticus is the book a lot of people go to condemn other people. Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to leave it there because we out of time. Isn't that awful? Yes, it is. Anyway, I enjoyed him, and I hope we're going to keep Kent's number, right?
Most definitely.
Okay. All right, Nashville, what would Jesus do about refugees and immigration and its challenge for Christianity? We thank you so much for listening today. You all have the very best of the best. And don't forget, who loves you?
You've been listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station and its management.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.